Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining the welcome to the National Center for Family Philanthropy's monthly topical call for the Community Foundation Family Philanthropy Network. This call is a series that happens on the second Tuesday of the month for no more than an hour. This is your opportunity to learn from your peers, ask questions of each other, and provide your own tips and insights on the topic of the day. I'm Catherine Scott, your program director for the Community Foundation Network, and your call facilitator for today. Let's start with a couple quick logistics. Your lines are all open today, so please mute your line on your end if you have anything exciting going on, like the best puppy or baby in the world. It is a party line with all of us on here, so we can all hear each other, so please feel free to mute your line. If for any reason something arises, I can mute you as well. This is meant to be an interactive conversation, so we hope you'll jump in and share, and you can use the chat function or just share out loud. And we really hope you will. Remember to say your name and your city name when you offer your questions or insights so folks can remember who you are. We're recording the call today, and the recording will appear in the Community Foundation Dropbox, which is actually located at ncfp.org for all of your Community Foundation peers. And it's just for your Community Foundation peers, so this should be considered a private, safe space. Before we get started on the call today, I'm just going to ask who's calling in today so you guys can hear who's calling in. And if you have a question for either of our awesome experts or maybe something plaguing you in the virtual communication, virtual facilitation skill area, or something plaguing you on doing this virtual long-term facilitation. So I can only see your Zoom username or your phone number. So this is where I'm going to call it out and ask some exceptions in life if I'm mispronouncing anything. So Jay Lee, do you want to say hi?
Hi, this is,
go ahead.
Hi, this is Jennifer Lee from Seattle.
Perfect. And do you have a question for everybody today?
Actually, no. Not at the moment.
Miss Grogan, Ellie Grogan. That's okay, Ellie, we're happy to have you join. It looks like someone just chatted. I'll read it off in just a sec. Annie Hurwitz.
Hi, this is Annie Hurwitz from the Greater Houston Community Foundation.
Perfect, any questions for our facilitators?
Nope, none today.
Okay, and Ellie, if you wanna type in your welcome, you can do that, your name, your foundation, and if you have any questions for today or things plugging or from that perspective. C. Elop.
Hi, my name is Courtney. I'm also calling in from Seattle.
And this is Stephen Robinson, also calling in from Seattle. Same computer.
Perfect. Thanks for joining us. Donna Curry. Well, I know Donna's here. Donna, maybe if you want to chat in the chat box, if you would like. Colleen.
Hi, this is Colleen Hill with the Community Foundation of Holland Zealand.
Awesome, thanks for joining us. How about a 515 phone number?
Hi, we're the Community Foundation of Greater Des Moines. There are three of us here, and this is great timing for us because we have just offered our family meetings to be done virtually.
Perfect.
Do you mind sharing with us your names, team from Des Moines?
Sure. Sarah Reichart, Jordan Richardson, and Lynn Yance.
Perfect. Thanks, Janice, and thanks, Team Des Moines. I'm going to see if we have, I think that you guys were 515, if I'm correct. So 478.
Hey, this is Julia Wood with the Community Foundation of Central Georgia.
Perfect. And Julia, is there anybody else with you?
Nope, it's just me today.
Perfect. Sorry. She's usually got a party room going. 920.
Hi, this is Anna Engelhardt from the Community Foundation for the Fox Valley region, and we're in Appleton, Wisconsin.
Any questions for folks today?
I'm actually just popping on, so I'm in catch-up mode.
Perfect. And 707?
Hi, everyone. My name is Ellie Grogan. I'm with Community Foundation Sonoma County in Santa Rosa, California.
Perfect. Thank you. We got your chat, and now we can actually hear you.
Yeah, I'm here.
No worries. It happens. And Donna Curry said hi. She can hear and see us. She just is having microphone issues. So, Donna, if you want to chat, you're welcome to. And Donna's from Akron Community Foundation, and I had told you guys about Donna that she's building a space for family philanthropy at her foundation. I was bragging on your foundation. And I think we've got a colleague from Chicago, or 312.
Yes, you do. This is Bob Eichinger.
And Bob, we're talking about virtual facilitation today. Do you have any questions for our amazing leaders?
I not at the moment, no. I'm on listen mode, so.
Perfect. Did I miss anybody? Okay, so just a quick reminder, this is a party line, so feel free to mute yourself if you'd like, especially if you find that awesome puppy or kitty or UPS man or baby. We will feel free to mute you if desired as well, just if it's really noisy, but for the most part, we'll count on you muting yourself. You can feel free to turn on your webcam if you're on the computer, but also allow you to see Danielle LaJoy and Janice Simpson Shaw, who are both lovely, and I appreciate them joining us today. So I'm gonna not do them justice at all, but introduce them a hair and then let them introduce themselves and each speak for 5 to 8 minutes, share with you some of their lessons learned, and then we'll go into a dialogue and conversation. We actually didn't confirm ahead of time who would go first, so I apologize. Danielle, do you want to go first, followed by Janice?
Yes.
I've seen that. And that's a best practice that I didn't encounter and do. So there you go. You've got one already. So Danielle has worked in the philanthropy field since she was the ripe age of 14.
Yep.
Give or take. And has led peers and colleagues across the field, but also is at the Johnson Center, which is a great hub for family philanthropy and philanthropy in general in Michigan. And so she's had lots of awesome experiences both nationally and locally with facilitation. So I'm just excited to have her be able to share.
Yeah, thank you so much for the introduction, Catherine. So like she mentioned, I'm a graduate assistant here at the Johnson Center for Philanthropy at Grand Valley State University in Grand Rapids, Michigan. So I support the first endowed chair for family philanthropy at an academic center. So I get to do a lot of research into family philanthropy, working with foundation clients, and just get to be really immersed in this field. But prior to that, I worked for the Council of Michigan Foundations, specifically supporting their youth programs. So I was able to facilitate monthly meetings of youth philanthropists from across the state of Michigan and the advisors that support them. So it was really an intergenerational team to make the youth philanthropy program in Michigan really the best that it could be. So that's a little bit where some of my facilitation skills have come from. With doing those meetings per month, as well as facilitating speaker meetings for one of the conferences that the Council of Michigan Foundation puts on. I'm sure you guys are familiar with some speaker coordination duties. Those virtual facilitation meetings are always a great lesson. But prior to working with CMF, I worked for Youth Philanthropy Connect as a fellow for a year, where I was able to facilitate also monthly meetings of youth philanthropists from across the country, from ages, Catherine, you might be able to help me out, 11 to about 21. So pretty, yeah, about that age range. And also some of the staff from YPC as well. So really intergenerational there as well. Really young kids to, you know, young adults. And we are facilitating programming for Youth Philanthropy Connect, as well as some of the conferences and events that were happening throughout the year where they were providing sessions and documents and programming for those conferences. So that's a little bit where my facilitation experiences have come from. And yeah, I think I can, you know, answer some questions about especially working with young people and young adults in facilitation. But is it helpful if I share some of my tips right now in this 5 minutes?
Yes.
Awesome.
What are your favorite tips? Or yeah. How do you prepare to facilitate? What did you do to be here today?
Absolutely.
And you know, maybe what's the one horrible thing you learned not to do?
Yeah, absolutely. This is very meta. I was preparing for a virtual meeting about virtual meetings. It's great. So I think one of my favorite tips is to share your screen if there are documents and agendas that need to be shown. I think that sometimes it's hard for people to pull up the information that they need in order to properly participate in a meeting. So being able to share your screen and show some of the things that are going to keep the meeting rolling is really helpful. Also, you know, pre-meeting, preparing, ensuring that there's an agenda that's really focused and has a way to, let people know that this meeting needs to happen and it's not just something that could be sent over an email. It's something that needs full participation in questions and tasks. So that's a little bit of preparation as far as agendas go. I think it's also important to have a little bit of an icebreaker if there are groups that have never really met before, even something just as simple as what are you looking forward to in the next 2 weeks or what do you like the most about your job? That sort of thing I have also found is very helpful. Another thing that may be covered later is finding ways to designate roles for people, either support staff that are helping you with these meetings or for leadership, leader attendees, maybe like the chair of a committee, the chair of a family foundation board, that sort of thing. Engage them as note takers, engage them as devil's advocates to keep people, thinking about some important things. And even maybe if you're comfortable engaging them as technical support, if that makes sense for you, always have a person for technical support in case things go awry. So those are some of my favorite tips to prepare, make sure that you really know the agenda really well and that you test out your technology beforehand. That's what we did before this call. Make sure that you're in a quiet space. I didn't do this today, but I absolutely should have. Hanging a sign on the door maybe that says meeting in progress, do not disturb. Also found that to be really helpful. And just a couple last two tips that I want to share. If you have a group that really needs to accomplish something during the meeting, I think it's important to always end with either a question, a task, or some sort of a focus area to really wrap up the meeting and, lead you into the future after the meeting is over to have something, tangible after it's over. And just a little fun thing to share, I actually learned this from YPC. If it's a more intimate meeting, five or less people, I think it's great to send beforehand, bring some water, bring some tea, bring some coffee, and we can all have our, beverages together as if it were a real meeting. I think that makes it a little bit nicer and feels like a real meeting that people want to be engaged in. So yeah, that's a little bit about what I can share.
Danielle, we sent $5 gift cards to everybody, right?
Yeah,
and said, go to Starbucks.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if, that was the way that other people might want to go, but I loved that. I use it now, especially if I'm meeting with young people I'm mentoring. I make sure to send them some sort of a gift card. Hey, get your Starbucks and we can meet on Skype together and have this experience.
We had one question to follow up on what you said, and I'm just going to ask, and then we'll hear from Janice if that's okay. What does a virtual icebreaker look like?
A virtual icebreaker. So you have to make sure to call people, call out the names. Let's say that I ask everyone to go around and say their name, their city that they're in, their job, and something you're looking forward to in the next week. You would go down the list, we're looking at right now of what the participants are and try to call them by their name or their number because it's really tricky if you let people answer on their own because people will talk over each other. Some people might not know when to go, that sort of thing. So that's always been helpful for me is, calling on Janice to give her icebreaker question, if that makes sense.
And something I picked up from Danielle is she always would say who was on deck.
Yeah, that is also very helpful. So if the next person is supposed to speak, let them know they're the next person that's supposed to speak. And another thing I forgot to mention is when you're creating the agenda, make sure that each agenda item has someone that owns that agenda item. So if there's a section on brainstorming, who is really facilitating that brainstorming session in the virtual meeting? So if Catherine is doing it, I'm going to let Catherine know beforehand. All right, and after this section, Catherine will be facilitating this little brainstorming session. So everyone is really keeping track to what their role is within the meeting.
And you guys can't, if you are on the phone, you can't see, but both Danielle and Janice are wearing headphones, which are really handy in case their space does get loud. So we're in NCFP's conference room. And I will say we have glass walls around us and I can hear some of my coworkers just a hair. So the headphones tend to drown that out. So if you have headphones that are handy and if you're able to, if it's a small group, it definitely can be helpful. So Janice Simpson Shaw is here with us. Janice is a consultant. She's worked with giving families across the country. She's worked with community foundations. She's led different meetings. She also has led expert facilitation courses. I've stood in the room, sat in the room, and watched. I've seen her come up behind people and sometimes do that grace of, hey, wait, you know. And so I've seen her grace in leading groups. She's led Next Gen Leader programs. And by Next Gen, I mean ages 21 to 40. But I know she's also led families across ages and generations in these meetings and opportunities, and has been really thoughtful about her facilitation and preparation and just how to prepare and be really thoughtful about creating something that'll keep going in a great way. So I'd love to have, by the way, logistics-wise, Danielle was in Michigan. Janice is in the DC area. So I'd love to have Janice be able to share with you. And I know this explanation does not fully do her justice, but she's awesome. And I'll let her share a little bit more. And her bio is on our website too. You can see more there.
Thank you so much, Catherine. And I have to say, I was just taking notes madly during Danielle's intro. There are so many good nuggets there. So thank you, Danielle. I'll share a favorite icebreaker before I dive into my substance, just so I don't forget. We can do go-arounds as icebreakers virtually. I've also, when everyone is on a webcam, done visual things. So I was working with a group and we were talking about the topic of, ready for it, power in philanthropy. And this is a group of athletes that are using their fame and their dollars for philanthropic capital. And so I said at the beginning of the call, on the count of three, everyone's gonna make the face that the word power makes you think about. We went 1, 2, 3, and people made their faces. And it was just a way to lead into a topic that is uncomfortable for a lot of people and also lend some levity to a topic that's a little bit heavy. So that's another one. I'll do quirky questions similar to Danielle, but I think it's really important, just as Katie did, as we started this call, to get everyone's voices in the room, so to speak, just as I would in a virtual room. So it's not just the two of us talking heads here. I really think there's so much value for everyone in hearing who's in the room. So I am here in the DC area, and my quick and dirty background is that I've spent pretty much my whole career with a little foray in journalism in the nonprofit sector, both working with nonprofit organizations on the ground. I then served for about 11 years at Exponent Philanthropy, building leadership programs for foundation executive directors and next gen folks, as Catherine alluded to. And for the last 4 years or so, I've been a full-time consultant, and what I do is facilitate. So when I was invited to join you all, I said, I love nothing more than geeking out about facilitation. So this is really, truly fun for me. So I'm so thrilled to be with you all. I'll also share that two other things in my background, very different things. One is that in my volunteer life, I sit on my community foundation's grant-making committee. And it's been such a healthy experience to live or try to live some of the values and best practices that I've spent a mighty long time preaching. And it's given me such a deeper understanding for the real intergenerational dynamics at play, for the real technology issues at play. And I'm really grateful for that opportunity. So that's been really fun to get to wear a different hat in that environment. A lot of my facilitation training has come from a shop called the Interaction Institute for Social Change in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Highly recommend their trainings. Their nonprofit rates are really modest. So if you're interested in going deep on facilitation, and pretty much everything they teach is applicable in this virtual space, I would just recommend them highly. I feel like what they teach is sort of infused into my soul and my practice at this point. So to do a couple of my top tips, and I was thinking about some examples, I've done a fair amount of virtual facilitation. I was trying to think of a couple different examples that used different modalities. One was an Indiana-based large family foundation, like 100 family members are engaged in the foundation in some shape or form, but not very many of them were taking advantage of the opportunities for discretionary grant-making dollars. And so they wanted to sort of do a mix of education and galvanizing and excitement. And a colleague and I did a webinar, and it ended up being 20 or 30 people scattered from around the country, all different generations. And it was a mix of didactic and engaging, and we really wanted to get people empowered and enthusiastic by the end. So we did it on GoToWebinar, which is a similar platform to Zoom. I think Zoom is better for what it's worth, but we used GoToWebinar. We did a mix of slides, video, and we did a lot of chat box use. We'd been warned that this was a group that was really quiet, and so we did a lot of forced questions in the chat box. We said, now we're gonna pause and ask each of you, what's a grant you've been involved in making that you're really proud of? And people who wouldn't speak would type in, and then we would read aloud. And that was a different way to bring their voices into the room in a group. Crickets are a real risk in virtual meetings. And so I like to create sort of forced discipline, as Danielle was saying, right, sort of structures to force it a little bit, because I think it's much more meaningful to everyone. The second example I wanted to share is actually the group that I did the like, what's your face for power, is a group of athletes and athlete foundations trying to do better philanthropy. It's a certificate program through Johns Hopkins. And that was a really small group. It's a group generally of like 6 to 12 international. So there were all sorts of time zone dances to be done. And we just used Google Hangout for that group. So for a small group, Google Hangout, free, most of us have it, is an easy modality. In both cases, one of my top tips is there was a clear person on tech. I'm not a tech person. I'm really, really not a tech person. So it's really important to me that there's a clear person on tech, and that just as you all knew today, and Catherine said at the top of the call, if you have any problems, call our office. People know who that tech person is, so they know what to do if they are having tech problems. Let's see. So my top tips. I took notes. So prep tech. I'm a tech-focused person. I would say one of my biggies is something, a turn of phrase that's relationship before process. We do something as we did on this call, just hearing each other's voices, where people are calling in from, if they have questions before we dive into the work at hand or an icebreaker, as Danielle is saying. I think anything to allow us to just be human in this weird, I don't know how many dimensions we're in the computer, right? Two dimensions plus voice in this weird two-dimensional world, I think to allow us to be more human is really helpful for getting the work done. The second thing I would say is that, and this is true always in meetings, but I think particularly virtually, let form follow function. So most of you are on webcams today because there isn't a strong need to be, right? But I think Danielle and I were really encouraged to have our faces here so that you could see us and this could be a little bit more human. And Danielle shared, you know, if you're referencing documents, share your screen. But there's a time and a place for conference calls. There's a time and a place for webinars. There's a time and a place for sharing a deck. There's a time and a place for having a live Google Doc that multiple people can be messing around in and editing together collectively if you're wordsmithing something. But I would just be really clear about what are the outcomes we're driving for in this meeting? And then what is the tool that will most effectively help us in this virtual meeting achieve those goals? I hope that makes sense. So form follows function. And then the last thing I would say around top tips is to always, always find lots of ways to be interactive. We can use the chat box. We can do full group go rounds both at the onset of a
Janice,
meeting.
Janice, I can't hear you. Is it just me?
No.
You went out
I'm
for a minute.
I'm still here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Could you guys hear Danielle? Okay. So on CFP's phone is horrible. I apologize, guys.
It's generally mine, and I so appreciate you saying something. Let me know if it happens again. So I was just saying, always find ways throughout the course of any virtual meeting to be really interactive. So we can use the chat box. We can do full group go-arounds, not just at the beginning of a meeting, but throughout the course of a meeting. So we're going to pause now and say, what in that presentation we just heard from your board chair did you find exciting? What questions do you have? What freaks you out or worries you? You know, some prompt questions, and then a go-around. And we're all adults, or maybe we're working with kids too, but people can always pass. But I would much rather in a virtual call proactively invite people to speak and have them say, I'll pass, than wait for people to speak up. People tend to be more reticent on virtual learning experiences, I find. Let's see. I've paused there on top tips. In terms of preparing, and this is generally something I do for facilitation. I time really tightly. I had a note to myself here of when I started speaking so I can be sure to honor my end time. I pause more frequently for those little interactive pieces if I'm facilitating and really design them in. I also always, here I'll show you, this is gonna be like the meta, as Danielle was saying, like in prepping. So as you all were introducing yourselves, I was jotting your names down and where you're from. And if I was facilitating this full call, I would put tick marks next to people's names as they speak so that I can track in a room, a live room, it's easier to know who our dominant voices are and who our quieter voices are. Virtually, I find I literally just put tick marks next to people's names, and then I might proactively invite someone to speak a little bit more. Do, 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 do. And I think I'll pause there for right now, and we're really excited to hear questions. And I think we both probably have lots more to say, but we'll pause there for questions and reflections.
Awesome. Thank you, Janice. Thank you for sharing. And sorry, guys, NCFP's phone was the tech issue, so always fun. Who has questions for Janice or Danielle or your peers or colleagues?
This is Annie Hurwitz. Have you guys seen any particular strategies or success when doing online facilitations with particularly college age people?
So I can take this if that's helpful. I have facilitated with college age youth quite a bit. So I think one of the most important parts with this is scheduling meetings in a time that is actually available for college students. I know we all know that young adults are very busy. They've got classes. A lot of people are working. They have social commitments, that sort of thing. So it is tricky to find a good time to actually meet with college age youth and have everyone be present. When I have facilitated before, honestly, a lot of our meetings were at 8 o'clock on Sunday nights. That's just the time that worked for all of the youth that I was facilitating with. So I think one of the first things is maybe acknowledging that you're gonna have to meet outside of business hours and that, or else people just won't be able to come. And also what I said before with having a very clear reason for the meeting and having tasks that should be finished or brainstorming that should have taken place is important. To make them feel like they really have a role to play there in some sort of tangible thing that they'll come away from the meeting having done. Is that helpful? I can answer any more specific questions as well.
Yeah, no, that's great. I think just one thing we're thinking about is just how to engage that age, and especially when they are so busy. And so kind of cutting through the noise of all their commitments. So yeah, that's super helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, and just if I can ask, what's the context of your engagement with the college-aged youth? Because I think that can also, you know, affect how best to reach them.
Yeah, I think that's still in development. So any thoughts on things you've seen work or not work just for overall programming would be great.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think working with career centers and volunteer centers is a really good place to find college-aged youth that are interested in engaging with philanthropy, volunteering, and foundations in that way. And, you know, getting sort of a critical mass of people from those centers is helpful to, you know, just source out the levels, like, of engagement that you're looking for from there. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Janice, did you want to add?
Yeah, I would just add one thing that is, if you're specifically working with multi-generational family foundations and trying to think about how to engage that demographic, one way it's also an efficiency measure for you as professional staff is that I do think if you're looking to, I know one foundation on the phone said you've just started offering family meetings virtually, which is great. And my advice around that, one of the questions the NCFP team had asked us in advance is, you know, how to start virtual meetings with multi-generational families. I would say really doing a tech prep call one-on-one with every member of the family is worth it before the first time so that you're just over the tech hurdles and people feel comfortable. And I know in a number of families I've worked with, young people have sort of taken the lead on prepping their parents or grandparents. And I think it's just a great way to sort of turn the knowledge base on its head a little bit to say, okay, well, grandma might be the matriarch, you know, in our family fund. But, you know, granddaughter A is the one who knows tech. And so we're going to teach each other. And I think that's just a nice role reversal and opportunity and something that for digital natives is really easy, frankly. And then it lessens your burden as a staff member on having to do those little one-on-one 15-minute check-ins so everybody knows how to use Zoom or use Google Hangouts.
I would also add, Danielle, when we did some things with college kids, we also used to use text reminders for the whole group.
Yeah, so. Text reminders. Yeah, absolutely. And just to add again real quick to the question of like how to get started, I think as far as Family Foundation youth go, it would be a really good idea to maybe catch people when people are home together. So if there's siblings that you're trying to reach that are maybe both college age during Thanksgiving breaks, Christmas breaks, summertime when a lot of people are together and they have a little bit more free time, that's a really good time to catch people. And when they're sort of in the family mindset and are really willing to start engaging with some of the family philanthropy areas that they may not be thinking about as much during class times.
I want to ask, we had a question somebody typed in, so I'll preserve their confidentiality just in case, but how do you manage family dynamics that come in a virtual space? I see Janice smiling, so I don't know, Janice, do you want to respond first?
Sorry, I was just unmuting myself. I'm smiling, so it's just an interesting question about, right, so a little bit different than in a room, right? We show up the way we show up, but we don't have the opportunity that we do in a room to place a gentle hand on someone's shoulder or to give them the hairy eyeball or to catch them during a break in the hallway. I definitely have used, I'm trying to think if I've really seen family dynamics come out ugly in virtual forums. I don't really think I have. I have used chat boxes to do some one-on-one check-ins with people to say, hey, haven't heard you, you know, pipe up, would love to hear your voice in the conversation. Is everything okay? Or, you know, I've definitely had well-intentioned foundation leaders that are wanting to invite the younger members of the family to have more of a voice, but dominate heedlessly anyway. And I've definitely done some gentle, like, hey, want to make sure that there's space to hear from so-and-so and so-and-so. I think those things are chat box doable, but I would say I don't recommend virtual meetings for the most fraught and challenging conversations. I think that, again, sort of form following function, if there's a family that really needs to talk through hard stuff, I think if at all possible, it's better to do it in person. Is it not always possible? Sure. I think if I were in that, I have not been in that situation. I don't think I've had I'm just thinking through. I honestly don't think I've had really tricky family dynamics come up virtually. I sure have in boardrooms, I'll tell you that. But I think that if a family really wanted to do that, I would caution them against it. I would really encourage them towards in-person if possible. And if that wasn't possible, I would do a whole heck of a lot of pre-engagement, probably one-on-one intake calls with every member, some sort of a survey tool so that people could share their thoughts and then I could aggregate them and share them back to the group. Just a lot of careful ground laying, and I would tread really carefully as a facilitator. I do think it's a great question, and I would encourage people to move towards in-person for those harder conversations. The lighter ones, you know, some of those one-on-ones in advance can help just sort of, if you know so-and-so is always the one who doesn't prep or so-and-so the ones who always dominates, you know, one-on-one conversations in advance can help you preempt that. Usually the person who dominates just wants to be heard. So if you listen to them for an hour in advance on the phone the week prior, then they've been heard and they generally will be a little bit more attentive to others in the actual call. The person who doesn't prep, again, talking to them 2 days prior and just talking them through it so at least you've prepped them. You can do those things, but those are not, you know, messy, tricky dynamics. Those are just sort of human. Danielle, if you have anything else, please. That's such a hard one.
Yeah, I think I may cede that one to you. I know, and this is more just for dynamics in general, not even specifically family, but there, I have not personally used them, but I know people that have the collaboration super cards. So it's a set of cards that have sort of not instructions, but some suggestions for people to actually hold up during virtual meetings. So there's one that says, enough, let's move on. There's one that says devil's advocate. So it's just some fun sort of quirky ways to get people, like it's the light tap on the shoulder, like, come on, it's time to, you know, move on from this question that we've been beating for half an hour. And there's also some cool ones that are like, you're frozen or turn up your microphone, that sort of thing. That's about all I could contribute for the family dynamics piece.
And I think we did have someone that came and spoke with us that turns on music and will actually, which is sometimes weird on the internet, but sometimes works fine. Well, actually, people write down what they're thinking ahead of time. And I know someone who's a family philanthropy consultant who is telling Jen and I on our program team how they are doing their intake calls on video chat. But I will say that that consultant themselves has come a long way on how they use video chat. So like having their home set up be in good shape and kind of assessing the other person's capability with that. We had a call this morning with one of our board members and we were going to do it on Zoom video chat. And I emailed and said, hey, we're all on Zoom. And they said, I thought you were going to call. So 20 minutes later, we were on the phone on a conference call. So like we're all, you know, I think it does speak to that, you know, not everything works all the time. So what other questions do you guys have?
If there's not questions from the room, the virtual room, so to speak, I would just, you know, put out as one prompt, well, two prompts, I'll just say, for kicks, other things that you've seen work great that you want to share with this group, because I think collectively there's a whole lot of knowledge on this phone. So things you've seen work great from small to large things in virtual meetings, and what like stumps you or stresses you out about facilitating virtual meetings. So what have you seen work really well that you'd like to share with the group, and what stumps you or stresses you out about facilitating virtual meetings or thinking about doing so in the future?
I guess we can, I'd be curious, I'm just gonna ask, we have our folks from Des Moines, Iowa. I'm gonna ask, do you guys have something that stumps you or this works well for you guys? You're all in the team room together, so maybe it's a little less calling.
Sure, well, we have not actually had our first virtual meeting yet, so we are trying to engage our families and their next generation of successors. So when we had those conversations with a few of our families, we had brought up the idea that you all had about when families are in town together over the holidays and getting them together to meet as a family to talk about their funds. And they said, that's not a good idea. When our kids come home for the holidays, we want to spend time with them, having fun, not talking about financial matters in our family. So we went towards the whole virtual family meeting so that we could have those conversations with everyone. So we're really looking for just general ideas, Zoom, the whole GoToWebinar, Zoom, Google Hangout, what works best for everyone else, and that's kind of where we're at this point. So we don't have anything to add into the conversation. We're hoping to take away some good ideas.
Ellie, what about you guys in Seattle? I know that I apologize, Sonoma. I know that some of our teams in Sonoma, and I think Seattle and Atlanta have all done these before. Have you had engagement with these?
I'm fairly new to the philanthropic advising role, so I haven't done as much work with families, but from the program's perspective, it's committees, we would sometimes have virtual meetings. And the thing that I found a little tricky is that it seemed like the participants wouldn't always value it in the same way as an in-person. So you get on the call and you think everyone's going to be there. And then, you know, someone comes on and they're like, oh, hey, by the way, I have to jump off half an hour early. They probably wouldn't do that if we were all meeting in person. So I'm just curious if others have had that experience and how you, sort of prepare people so that they're fully engaged and stay.
I can speak to that a little bit. It's a great question, and I think that is really common. So one thing is, I think having a really solid agenda that makes clear why each person is needed for all portions of the call, as Danielle alluded to earlier. I think that, and then sharing responsibilities, so different people actually have leadership roles at different points during the call. I think we do have to work to make our agendas a little bit more compelling and dynamic, and maybe more explicit than we might for an in-person meeting because of that tendency to, you know, flake out halfway through or be multitasking. You know, I've certainly been guilty of folding laundry or multitasking, you know, on group calls when I've not been facilitating. I think those are some of the things. And then there's an article that I've shared with the NTFP team, so they can post that after the call, from Beth Cantor, who some of you probably know. She's like the nonprofit tech guru of the universe. She's wonderful. And she has a great piece on facilitating virtual meetings. And one of the things she speaks about I really like is creating norms or ground rules specifically. And I think it's great for like a committee structure where you have standing meetings, or a team that meets virtually. It would be, I think, a little bit trickier for a family board or family group. But for a committee meeting, those sorts of things, I think just having ground rules and saying, hey, these meetings are different. So what can we all agree to so that we can make this time together productive and useful and worth all of our while, and that we're all taking it the same degree of commitment and seriousness. So that's in that piece, and that might be helpful. Danielle, Catherine, do you have things to add?
Yeah, I just wanted to share a little bit too about the agenda portion. Something that I had tried with some of my youth philanthropist in Michigan is sort of flipping the idea that we usually have of an agenda on its head. So typically in meetings, you know, we give updates, and then once all of our updates are over, we jump into the actual work of the meeting and what we want to accomplish. And by that point, like you mentioned, some people, you know, have to jump off a half an hour early. Some people already checked out by that point. So something that I tried was actually getting into some of the work that we could at the very beginning, and then sharing updates at the end, or if we didn't even have time to share updates or some of the things that were moving along at the end, just sharing that in an email after the meeting. And it actually was a time saver, and people ended up staying the entire part of the meeting because they felt like there was something that was going on, and they weren't just waiting through a bunch of updates and things that they could have been told via email. And that was very, very helpful for me. And just thinking about the idea of an agenda and how it doesn't necessarily have to be the thing that we think that it is. Catherine, anything to add?
I think you guys have it. I think you guys have it. I know we have a question from Jen, sure, who's been next to me, but didn't want to be on camera yet. So Jen.
So hi, this is Jen Green. I'm the program coordinator at NTFP. And Janice and Danielle, I was curious if you might have any thoughts on this. So in my previous position, I worked at a community foundation, and we did a lot of grant review committee meetings. And for some of those committee meetings, we had in-person sessions, and then sometimes we'd have people either come in on video chat, or they would write in their notes and send them in and have someone, a program officer, kind of repeat them out to the group. And I was wondering if you had any tips for facilitation where it's kind of half virtual and half in-person like that. I think we found that it was harder to incorporate the not in-person commentary, but we wanted to at the same time. So I wanted to know if you guys had any comments about that.
So I think I can maybe speak to that a tiny bit. I had, again, some of my youth go through a similar grant-making process where they would review the grants online, and then I would sort of aggregate all of their responses, and we'd talk about them as a large group virtually. And that was really tricky to get them to fully participate in the grant-making process virtually, to be prepared enough to actually talk and make some decisions when they came together virtually to talk about it. And when I say virtually together, we were in a sort of video meeting. So one thing that I found helpful is to use Google Forms as sort of a follow along to reviewing grants. So for this section, respond to, you know, this part of the grant and give some ideas what you think. For this section, you know, what are you thinking about this? And then at the end, you know, give some final thoughts about the grant. Would you fund? Would you partially fund? What are some questions that you have as we're reviewing these further? And they have to submit that before they can get on the grant call. It just make that really, really explicit. So that was really helpful for me. So I got all of their answers, was able to look through them, aggregate them, and do a little bit of minor analytics to see, you know, what way the committee was leaning towards, and be able to share that back with them in the virtual session. So they, you know, knew what the rest of the group was thinking, and they were really fully prepared to engage and make some decisions while we were all together.
And I would add that some people argue that best practice when you have sort of a mixed, a hybrid meeting where you've got, you know, say half a dozen people in a room and half a dozen people scattered remote, it is really hard. It's hard to hear. So some people say best practice is to have your facilitator be remote. And even if that means you as the staff person going into a different office, so that you have the greatest empathy for those listening in on the phone. That's one thing, is to have your facilitator remote. Can be, I don't know if I would argue it's best practice, but some people do, but it certainly is helpful. Another is always going to your virtual people first for their comments, and asking them to weigh in first. So that sort of, again, that very proactive invitation of engagement from the people who are virtual, because it is harder to be the virtual people, right? And then I think incredibly tight management of, so let's say we've got that half dozen group here in the room, incredibly tight management of having one person speak at a time, moving around the speakerphone if you need to. It's just technologically, I think that is one of the trickiest times for hearing. And I think just out of respect for people's time, if we're asking people to take that time to just do our very, very best to make sure that people can be heard and understood. So if we're asking them to engage fully. So those are some of the things I would say. And to go back to Danielle, your comment about the previous question in terms of turning agendas on their head, which I love, 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 love. I think that this is always true for meetings, but even more so a general truism for virtual meetings. Anything that can be done in any other format, do in another format. Like, because you want to get people's, the sacred time that you have their attention in these virtual meetings to really make good use of them. So listening to reports, for instance, I think is generally not a great use of time. And I love the idea to put those at the back end if you're going to have them, but to really do the things so that people feel like, yeah, I was needed in this meeting. I was needed, I was engaged, I was asked to participate, I had the right background, like I had gotten what I needed to in advance. Again, that's just sort of good meeting practice in general, so that I could participate fully. I was reminded the four times I needed to be reminded, because I know myself, you know, whatever that might be, so that then you maximize the experience, because they're hard. They're hard. And so I think doing everything we can to make that a meaningful experience for people is really worthwhile.
Janice, do you sometimes designate someone like the online voice, for lack of a better term? When we do like a 50-person Zoom call, we'll have one person as the facilitator and one person as the online, they're the computer person. Their job is to split people into virtual rooms and bring them back. Danielle's done this. We do it at NCFP. But do you have somebody, like, even when there's one or two board members, sometimes during a virtual Family Foundation board meeting, I know sometimes we've said, okay, it's your job to pay attention to the internet. Like, to make sure that person, like, if they don't get a chance to say something, you're even a second, like, can you, you know, say, remind us about Scott on the computer?
Yeah, I have done. I mean, it depends on the size of the group, but I'm thinking about the webinar I spoke about earlier with this Family Foundation out of Indiana that was about getting them more engaged under discretionary grant making. And there were, similar to today, there were two of us, but we were sort of speaking as experts, but also facilitating it. And we had very clear roles that when one of us was speaking, one of us was keeping an eye on the chat box and vice versa. So I guess in that way, yes. And I think it's great practice just to have like a, it's like your little conscience on your shoulder. It's your virtual conscience, keeping an eye out for those virtual people. Yeah, I haven't thought of it in those terms, but absolutely.
Well, we've kind of had to assign that role. And NCFP guys, if you have questions, we've used the rooms on Zoom for small group dialogue with 50 people. You can split them into the rooms, but you do have to have somebody watch that no one is in a room by themselves, because if they come late, they sit by themselves and that's boring. Like if they come to your reception desk, but they can't yell at you quite as easy. And we use GoToWebinar for all of our webinars for some reasons, just because there are a couple of quirks with Zoom webinars. So we've used this platform for these types of meetings and for recording and for audio and up to about 50 people. So if you guys have questions, NCFP is happy to tell you what we've used or why, but also you have your great peers and colleagues. Do you guys have one last question for each other? I know at least one of your mics wasn't working. If you want to type it in the chat box, you can. I'm just going to give you just a minute in case chatting is easier. And that's one virtual facilitation. It takes a minute to unmute yourself. Or find your keyboard under your lunch. Well, I want to thank our great speakers, Danielle and Janice. Danielle and Janice, any pausing and closing words of wisdom you thought of? I know you both sent resources, which we will post with the recording to ncfp.org on the event today, so everyone will have those along with the recording once it processes on the interweb. But do you guys have any closing words of wisdom?
Yeah, I may give one quick one. If you can, record your meetings, because it's super helpful to listen to them later on. And just one final thing that I thought of is if you're taking minutes and notes, which I would encourage you to do, it's really helpful to send them after the meeting and to send them right before the next meeting. Just send them twice, because sometimes things get lost in people's inbox and you really want them to be able to have those things to look at right before the next meeting. So yeah, that'll be my final technical tip for everyone. Thanks so much for letting me chat with you guys.
One of Danielle's past bosses used to record himself to check his facilitation skills, or her. I don't know if she knows who. Janice, do you have any closing words of wisdom?
I would say one tech and one substantive. The tech is, even though I'm actually not doing this today, so I'm not modeling best practice, I've always been told that when you have the option to use computer audio versus calling in on a phone line, particularly landline, you'll have better quality or more reliable quality on a phone line, that we've had really good audio today. So that's one little tech thing. And the second, that just people should know that all these platforms are great on phones, on iPhones and things, which I think just makes, from an accessibility standpoint, a little bit less daunting to get on. But from a substantive standpoint, this is like the thing I preach most passionately when I teach facilitation, and I would just underscore it here today, is just that a really good meeting takes really good preparation. And I would just not underestimate the thought and the substance behind a good meeting. I usually give things like a 3 to 4 or 3 or 4 to 1 prep ratio for like an hour long meeting. I would definitely prep at least 4 hours to really think about how to make great use of that time, as we've been speaking out today. So onward to happy, healthy, and productive meetings. This was really fun. Thanks for inviting me.
And you had a comment in the chat box. This was so helpful. So thank you so much. And everybody stay tuned for those resources. Thank you all. And please thank Danielle and Janice with us, and join us in thanking them for their gifts of their time today to share with all of you about their amazing thoughts on this topic. Thank you guys, and happy Tuesday.